It's Bloomsday, and I'm delighted to bring in you the Rippling Pages podcast on the day in which James Joyce's modernist novel, Ulysses, is set, which was originally published in 1922. Today, I'm joined by Helen Palmer, and she's written a Ulysses-inspired novel herself, and her novel, too, is remarkable in many ways. Described as a queer love story, Helen's chosen to set her novel at the tail end of the Gen Z era on the turn of millennium. It's the 16th of June, 1999. Rather than gorgonzola sandwiches, her characters have a steady diet of sausage and egg McMuffins. Elsewhere, Helen has had poems published in the Minnesota Review. She used to be a senior lecturer at Kingston University before moving to Vienna. Her academic work has focused on Deleuze and queer defamiliarization. She joins me from Vienna. Helen, welcome to the Rippling Pages podcast.
Thanks very much.
I mean, before we get into it, just say Blackpool is where this novel is set. And Blackpool is a place that I know very well. It was a place of my summer holidays and some winter holidays, actually, as a child. It used to be the most magical place on earth for me when I was a kid, when we used to. We'll get into that, and we're going to talk a bit about Blackpool for sure, which I hope you don't mind. I guess I want to know first is, when did you decide that you wanted to write this novel so focused or so much based on Ulysses?
It really did just come to me that I wanted to write something inspired by Ulysses. And Ulysses had been something, a book which had, I mean, I studied English at uni in Glasgow, and I remember being introduced to this massive book, which already has such a hype and such a mythology surrounding it. At the time, age 20 or so, I was hugely daunted by it, as I think most people are. And it took me a good few years before, I bashed my way through it. I tried to, and I never thought at that stage that I would ever think about writing something inspired by this book. Never thought that. I didn't have the confidence at that age, but I was writing around that age, the kind of bare bones of the story that became the kind of central love story. I suddenly thought, okay, I want to write a queer love story. Blackpool is crying out for more literary renditions. And I'm obsessed by Ulysses and how Joyce writes. And so suddenly just all those things came together and I thought, okay, this is what I want to do. And at the time it felt like a big thing. And I thought, can I do that really? And then I thought, not that you have to write the next Ulysses, it's just something that's inspired you and you can just use the bits that inspire you and write your own story. So I had to kind of get over that and not see it as this impossible thing and just work with it in the way that I, you know, to the best that I can. And so I finished it early last year, I think, in between writing another theoretical book. So it was a slow kind of on and off process, but it was always an enjoyable one. Like, I loved every second.
Wow. I don't know if many writers, I'm sure writers do enjoy what they're doing, the writers that I've had on the podcast, but I don't hear that kind of such love relationship with a book. Loved every second of writing it.
Yeah, I really did. I've thought about it and I've heard, it is hard work. And especially when you know there's a bit that just isn't quite right and you need to rewrite it or you need to edit bits down or get rid of bits. But it's really been a joy, a labor of love, I would say. But from the beginning where I didn't have a very structured attitude to writing at all. I just used to do this kind of morning writing thing and write little bits when I felt kind of inspired. And then it wasn't until much later on that I started putting it together. One thing I didn't want to do with this book was for it to be a very niche kind of elitist thing that only appeals to people who've read Ulysses and who know it really well. And then that's often people who've studied literature at uni or, you know, they've been educated to a certain level that they can appreciate it's a difficult book, Ulysses.
I mean, there's a lot going on in Pleasure Beach, your novel. And yeah, not to say that this, I mean, we're not really not suggesting that this book is in the shadow of Ulysses. It's not there to kind of complement it. It is its book its own right completely, and it's very distinct from Ulysses. What I do enjoy is a little snippets of little, you know, little nods that you get to Ulysses I think my personal favorite is the reference where you conflate the End People song, Search for the Hero Inside Yourself, with obviously Stephen Hero. Well, I don't know if this is what you're doing explicitly, but yeah, it's the Stephen Hero, which is the original name of Stephen Dedalus, who is obviously the main character of Ulysses. But yeah, I think you've hit on a really good point. You've hit on a couple of really good points there. Ulysses is a difficult novel. It's very much reserved to the academy these days. And if you haven't got, if a lot of other pressures going on in the world, I don't know whether you're going to pick up a 900-page modernist novel. Yours is shorter. Yours plays on some of these dynamics and some of these problems, perhaps, of canonical literature in our modern world. And also the place for, you know, serious books in our, you know, modern world as well. And it's steeped in the kind of culture of Blackpool and the lives that these characters have. It's about people who are the people that this book is about.
Well, I was trying to imagine with the three main female characters, they're all 19 years old, and I was trying to create three very different characters with different histories and different backgrounds, but they're all from Blackpool. So, first of all, that shows a variation and a diversity within the town, which I think is important for people who aren't from that area and they have one, they only have one perception of this town. Or they might, but they might know, yeah, this is a seaside place. It's where people go on holiday. It's fun. It's kind of bright lights, trashy, you know, all of those kind of things that people think about. As a kind of maybe a preconception. And then another thing which people might have as a preconception is this is a fairly economically deprived town. And one thing that I can't tell you how many times I've heard someone said to me, oh, Blackpool, you know, it's on the list of worst places to live in the UK or something like this. So what I wanted to do was to create three characters very different to show that, yeah, with it, you know, one place is never just a preconception. It's a whole world within that place. And there's going to be people with very different circumstances living within the same area. And yeah, you asked me, who are these people? So they're fictional characters, but their elements of them are all based on my experiences growing up in this place and people I knew and me as well. It's all, you know, it's a kind of, I picked, as people do when I guess when they write fiction, you make the magic with the bits that you find around you and the things that you've experienced yourself.
Pleasure Beach, for those who don't know, is a reference to the theme park that's at the south of the town. It is, for those who've not visited, it is the kind of quintessential British seaside. What do they call the lights show?
Illuminations.
The illuminations. So yeah, the, you know, when there's part of the street lights on and the kind of, there's used to be Coronation Street characters.
Yep.
There's McDonald's characters. There used to be back in the day. I don't know whether there is so much now, but yeah, there's nothing like driving through a town and seeing, you know, characters of Coronation Street lit up. You kind of present the diet of the seaside, and this is the word that kept cropping up as I read the book. The sights, the smells of it, what people eat, what gives them sustenance, so in all different ways. And it feels like this environment is being lived and lived through these characters. I guess in the same way that Joyce presents to us Dublin.
I have such strong memories. Which, I mean, you said you went there a lot on holiday, so I'm sure you also have it. So the moments where if you go to the pier and you buy donuts, I'll never, ever forget what that's like. And exactly the smell and exactly the taste. And I obviously have been back over the years and, you know, I've retrod the steps that I, you know, I've redone the things that I did when I was younger. And it's the same, all the stuff's still there. It's the same. Another thing is that I've done in recent years is I've been quite a lot to Brighton, and Brighton is not Blackpool, of course. It's different. It's richer, for one thing. It's not quite the same, but it does have the seaside vibe. So I've been to Brighton quite a lot and thought a lot about Blackpool while I've been there. And it doesn't have the same magic as Blackpool, and it doesn't have the lights. And you mentioned the Coronation Street characters, and that's something which is really strong in my memory as well, seeing the Coronation Street characters. And it's in the novel. It's mentioned in the novel where you see the names and these faces going down the prom at night. They're like the celebrities at the center of the world, if you're from that part of the world, I guess.
Well, that's the thing. And it'd be really easy to be derisory, really. I think just going back to that discussion of Ulysses, what's coming to mind is that it is about what appeals, you know, what aspects of culture appeal to certain people. And to transpose this topography of Ulysses onto Blackpool, because you're not transposing the topography of Dublin onto Blackpool. It's the topography of this novel onto Blackpool.
Yeah.
And the clash of that high literature compared to culture that's not considered high or you know, haute or whatever. But that has an appeal to people, and that is important to people, and that should be respected, surely.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of topography, it's interesting because it's something which only occurred to me quite recently about the towers, the Martello Tower, which obviously opens Ulysses, and Blackpool Tower. And I do have a bit of a fascination with towers in general. And there's something quite mystical about towers, I would say. Just these strange structures, which are just, you know, much higher than everything else. And Blackpool Tower has its own mythology. And so the tower has a presence which isn't talked about loads in the novel, but it's there. And one of the characters, Rachel, she kind of pontificates a little bit about it in the first chapter, as if it's this kind of aerial that's transmitting messages from we don't know where, and this kind of, because she's a little bit not of sound mind at this point, so her imagination is going all over the place. But I like daydreams about what towers what towers are doing that we don't know about.
Obviously, yeah, you made a link to sort of the Martello Tower. I don't know if that was conscious or not when you writing it, but what else is similar is the sea. And the references to the sea, you know, the Snotgreen Sea that opens Ulysses, and your sea is very important. I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about the significance of the sea in your novel.
The sea makes its way into almost everything that I write without me even realizing it. So I'd say that was also unconscious. The fact is that Blackpool's by the sea. So that's just a kind of fact. As the years went on and I was writing this, of course, it struck me that pleasure and beach is so much connected to what I'm writing. Both of these words, pleasure and beach. So it's a lot about desire. I mean, it's a queer love story. So there's a lot of kind of a lot of talk about desire, an experience of desire within the novel. And then obviously a beach is what the sea is kind of connecting to. We have the beach and we have the sea. And at some point in the novel, I actually talk about the waves that lap on the sand and the meeting of a solid and a liquid, because I'm really interested in the I don't know, the matter of the world and the stuff that makes up the world and the sand. And quite a lot in the novel, I talk about the transition between solids, liquids, and gases, these primary elements. And with sand is so interesting because it's almost like a liquid, because you can pour it, because it's actually just very, very small pieces of matter. And then with the liquid of the sea, the meeting of these points. And then when people write about desire, their desire is like a flow, or it can be seen as a flow. So it's like a liquid. So there's something about without me realizing, about five or six times in the novel, I'm talking about changes of state between solids, liquids, and gases. So that's something I think Joyce has. Joyce has this interest in the substances that are all around us, as well as the body, the weather and the feel of different substances and all of the senses. And so this is something which I, all the way through, was trying to engage with. The thing is about what I find really somehow touching about Stephen is that he's a young man. He's got this huge bristling intellectual ego, like you can feel it. And he thinks he knows best about everything. And yet he's desperately lonely and sad and depressed. And there's something about being a young person and having a kind of intellectual coming of age. And that's what I wanted to connect to with Rachel. She is Also someone who has this bristling intellectual ego that she's just had one term at uni and then she left because she's having a lot of mental health problems. But she's read so much and she's kind of, that's what's happening in chapter 3 of Pleasure Beach, because she goes through all of the different things that she learned in her first term at uni. And these are different literary theoretical terms that she had these introductory lectures on. And so it's that chapter is comprised of her take on lots of these theories. And of course, her particular state of mind at that time in her bedroom with a hangover, she just met this girl and the girl has become this obsession in her head, and she's kind of, she cannot see these theories in any other way than through her obsession with this, with Olga, the other character.
What unites those characters is, I think, as you said, there is desire, and Rachel has this very strong desire for this, for Olga. Talking about young people and talking about, I'm thinking about the novel and I'm thinking about this idea of pleasure and beach. And it's kind of this pun on pleasure as and desire. And if you think about the idea of what it means to be beached, it means to be sort of washed up and isolated and put away, yeah, you know, stuck in a way. And I felt like a lot of these characters, well, some of these characters, there was a lot of desire, but it didn't always necessarily lead them where it wanted to, or they couldn't follow their desire in some way.
I think that so much of Pleasure Beach is about desire. But it isn't about consummation of that desire, really. You don't get that in the novel, but what it's about, and Olga, the character Olga, she's written a play about desire, and she again also has this kind of young person's arrogance and thinking she's written the best play that anyone's ever written and she's going to get it on the stage. But it's about desire and how the having of the desire is actually the thing that we want. So going back to Rachel, when she's thinking about Olga, she's so lost in her intellectual wanderings that she can't connect to her own body and her own self very easily. So that is almost a displacement of desire, you could say, if you were going to be, I don't know, psychoanalytic about it. And Olga struggles also with her desire because she is completely thrown by the fact that she is attracted to a girl and she's never been attracted to a girl before. And she's so much in her world of boys. She loves, both of them are struggling with the desire that they feel, whether it's something that they can't really access or that it's displaced into intellectual theorization, something they feel ashamed of for reasons of, you know, cultural reasons or family background reasons.
Hey there, just a quick message from me. And just to say, if you're really enjoying today's podcast, I'd be really grateful if you left a review on your favourite podcast provider. The Rippling Pages is all about letting writers talk about their craft so that you and other listeners can learn more about the art of literature. Leaving a review increases the reach of the podcast and hopefully means that more people will hear about the writer's work. Thanks very much, and it's just great to have you here.
Well, yeah, well, you've called this, it's a queer love story. And there's also, it's been called a feminist novel.
I would say I'm a feminist, and it couldn't not be a feminist book. From a, let's say, a kind of theoretical angle, the story of one of the chapters is that, and this was the first thing I wrote, and this was the chapter which is in Joyce, the Oxen of the Sun chapter, where he does this stylistic chronology of the English language and how it's developed over the ages from Anglo-Saxon up to his contemporary time. And this was one of the first inspirations that I had to write this whole thing, because I wanted to do a feminist version of that, because he'd only used male voices. So I wanted to do a version that used female voices. That was my simplest beginning that I thought. And so that I did it. So that's probably the easiest example of how this is a feminist book. So it's a kind of gesture to redress a balance and use voices which had not been included in Joyce's version and had possibly been excluded historically in general. But it's also, there are things about the characters' lives that little things that they say almost incidentally about feminism, where Olga is saying to Rachel, Rachel says at one point, Olga taught me feminism. She stood there and in 5 minutes she taught me feminism, because Olga's a feminist from, she's a staunch feminist and she feels it and she lives it. and she understands the way the world is structured and that she's kind of disadvantaged in various ways. And this is the end of the 90s, and it's actually, things have moved on since then. So at one point, the way that her boss talks to her in her job is something which I think you couldn't get away with it now. You shouldn't have been able to get away with it then, but it's the end of the 90s, and that's actually quite a long time ago now, in a way. And then there's also the literary side of it, where Rachel, she hasn't had this. She would feel all of those things as well, but she doesn't have the literary feminist element at all. And this is something which they talk about, the two characters, because Rachel's only interested in male writers. And Olga, and no one's ever kind of challenged her on it. And then Olga says, why are the only writers that you've mentioned here men? And Rachel, that gives her this kind of, so she's having a kind of feminist awakening because of her conversations with Olga on this one night.
You mentioned a little bit before about the displacement of sort of intellectual thought into and desire into kind of these bodily symptoms. Your novel is a lot more embodied.
Within 20th century French feminist writing, let's say, how the body and writing are connected and how we can have a kind of embodied writing. But that's only one aspect. I think for me, the thing that I really, really found I was doing with this novel is it is really anatomical. And so Joyce has his bodily processes that he famously writes about. And, you know, he has masturbation and he has, you know, urination and all of the bodily processes. So that's one thing. And those things do also appear in Pleasure Beach. But what I really wanted to do was to really get inside the body. So I'm really interested in the internal cavities of the body. And this is something which, in the different streams of consciousness, whether you want, I don't know if you want to call it that or not, but within Pleasure Beach, there are lots of times where the internal parts of the body that we can't see are imagined. So there's mentions about the throat, the tunnel of the throat, and there's mentions about the cavern inside the chest, internalities and externalities. And this is something which I'm obsessed with, really fascinated with. And so I wanted to create as much as I could a kind of anatomy through the writing of the, or kind of to flip the insides and the outsides somehow of the body.
I think there's space essentially for literature to kind of be serious about how the body works. And I think that's where something like psychoanalysis, as we sort of seem to be skirting around those borders really, I think where some psychoanalysis do really offer something on that. And you mentioned Kristeva, who wrote really interestingly about, well, she wrote about the abject, didn't she, and waste. Yeah, the body is important, and it's treated with a sort of compassion and respect for these characters, and it guides them in ways that they're not always consciousness. It's a vessel for exploring and to be explored as well, I guess.
There's something about adolescent experience and the intensity of adolescent experience that goes with the pushing of the body to limits, and also what we put in the body and what comes out of the body, vomiting and ingestion of substances which are not necessarily always good for us, and also the novel deals with self-harm, so kind of cutting the skin. And then Rachel, the character who does this, she's thinking so much about what's going into the body and what's coming out of the body, and this action of making a cut on the skin present these things through the very much embodied experience of what it's like to be a young person, feeling it. You're aware, maybe you were aware of the theories and maybe you're not, but you're feeling it.
You know, mindfulness is a bit of a buzzword really, but I think there was a kind of mindfulness about this book. There was a groundedness, a desire to ground it in the world. Yeah, they are in this world and they are living it, and their bodies are a part of it. Your novel is after this night out of which Rachel has met Olga. And this seems quite an important event for Rachel. It makes her think about her desires and her life in different and new and not always new ways. Why did you choose it to set it after the event, the day after the event, rather than before the event?
The first thing I should say is that there are some, I guess you could say I cheated, because there are some flashback bits, but the flashback bits go back to the early hours of the same day. So it's still within the 24-hour period. And the reason why I started it there is because, I mean, it's the classic morning after thing. So it starts at 8 a.m. and there's been this big night the night before. And then with that comes all of the hangover, come down, regret. Then what with the flashbacks, you get a certain type of narrative form, which is a quick, you know, just a snapshot of something that's happened that just comes into your mind or comes into the characters' minds. And so I wanted to, I thought it was interesting to represent that, the flashback, which kind of superimposes onto the reality of the morning hangover. I also think that I was interested in this morning after period or this kind of day after, the state of mind. I wanted to represent the state of mind that these characters are in after a big party, because the mind is in a strange state and it's still not thinking normally, whatever that is. But it permits some, I wanted to use it as a device to allow the daydreaming or the mind wandering to go a bit further than it would have done otherwise. That's why it started there. And then just to keep it within the 24-hour period, that was a good constraint for me, the same as it does in Ulysses. I found that useful.
Is this a turning point for Rachel?
I don't think this day is a turning point. I don't think this day is a turning point for any of the three of the characters, really. I think that I wanted to make it feel kind of special for the three of them when they all meet on the beach and then they all go for a drink together. Because I feel like there's a bit of awareness. It's not explicitly said, but there's a bit of an awareness that these three characters have come together and they're all connecting. they're coming from such different places. They've all had quite different days, but then they're just all sitting together. Aside from that, and the strange, they feel kind of connected, these three. But aside from that, I didn't want to present this day as particularly different to any other day. In terms of the limits of how you can present a day, you can say also that I cheated in the final chapter, because the final chapter is speculative and it goes off into all these different potential endings. And that's why the formula for that, because each chapter has a formula. And the formula for the final chapter is time dilation. So how to calculate time dilation. And because I'm quite interested in how you can speculatively stretch or compress time or multiply it into different potential directions. And this is what we all think about when we read a novel. We think, what's going to happen after the novel? You know, what happens to these characters, especially when it's been only one day?
Is that an aspect of just the lives that we have to lead? We don't necessarily know, or do we kind of know where we're going to take ourselves?
That's a really deep question. it depends on if you're like a diehard Marxist, you would say the social being determines the consciousness. These characters are going to make decisions based on the particular socioeconomic place where they find themselves in the strata of society. And I also played with that a little bit in the final chapter, where there's the kind of the expectations of what Rachel would do, considering the background that she has, compared to the expectations of what Olga would do with the background that she has. And but also the way that they, you know, all people might push against those, because that's a very, I wouldn't want to have that. I wouldn't want that to be the, you know, that's, you know, they just do exactly what one would imagine them to do, coming from this background in this place and this time. That's no fun.
Fair enough. And I mean, yeah, it is a deep question. I was wondering if there was a particular idea you had about, you know, how these characters' fates might be sealed up, even though there are other options. But I think it doesn't have to be a modernist novel, does it, to write a novel in a day? Not reserved for modern, you know, modernity. Why? What is the continual appeal of the day, setting a novel within a time span of 24 hours?
I think because it's the way that we mark our lives as humans. Still, a lot of stuff is 24 hour. A lot of stuff just goes on 24 hour. But we do generally still need to sleep. So we have the waking time and the sleeping time, but we also have within the sleeping time, or the supposed prescribed sleeping time, we have partying, we have sex, we have, you know, the stuff that goes on in the dark. And then we have also the possibility of lights, which is the illuminations, which is, you know, Blackpool at night is just such a spectacle. There's a circularity to it, which I think is satisfying to us. You know, you start at one place and you come back to the same place. And there's a, like a reset, which happens at the end of, you know, at the end of one day and the beginning of another. And we, this is just how we mark time.
Yeah. And maybe that's what I was trying to ask before about where these characters are going, you know, how your mind can take you anywhere and you can fantasize and you can go places, you can imagine what you can and can't be. But how, I guess, how determined are these characters by their circumstances, by the kind of social context in which they are in? Something like Ulysses, I think Molly's story is quite a sad and...
Yeah, and with Molly, I've thought so much about the last, the way she writes or speaks about how she got together with Bloom. And when I first read that and really got into it, when I first got the opportunity to teach with it, I found it so romantic and so lovely, and how the last lines, and so yes, I said yes, I will, yes, and it's, and then the mountain flower and there, and all of this kind of romantic kind of stream of what she says. And then later, then I went through a phase of thinking, yeah, but she says when he asked her to marry him, and she says just as well him as another, or something like this, which is very throwaway and dismissive, and doesn't make it seem like he's the one for her at all. But then I've come round again, and I think there's something about it's not what's encompassed within that phrase, just as well him as another. It actually means, it doesn't mean that it's a lack of intensity. It actually means that there can be a huge amount of intensity with one person and then with another person. So it doesn't mean that she is not having all of these love feelings for Leopold Bloom at this time. It just means she's being somehow realistic, and at the same time, it can encompass great intensities. And that's something which I think is really interesting about the different ways we can read that, those lines.
It just struck me that kind of chord of watching that story sort of span out for Molly. And maybe it is something to do with, well, that novel finishes in the night, doesn't it? You choose to kind of go, this is, it's in the future and in the past, I think you say. That.
Yeah, it's kind of all over the place, temporally.
And it's about possibilities. It doesn't seem like there's the same possibilities for Molly. I mean, that, you know, the turn of the millennium is a very different world to what we live in. There's this feeling of possibility, you know, which was very prevalent at the time for everyone. Yeah. I think it was like, oh, the new century. Yeah. The new century's here, and what could that bring?
And I think it would be a different novel set now, obviously. But I think, we're in quite a different world now. It would be very interesting to try and think how it would be set in 2023.
Well, maybe that's the next one. The time has flown in the same way that a day flies by sometimes. Pleasure Beach is out today for Bloomsday. You are going back to Blackpool, I believe, to launch this book, the place that it's set, and the place obviously was your home. So good luck with that.
Thank you very much.
Otherwise, if you can't get to that, go out and buy the book. But for now, Helen, thank you very much for joining me on the Rippling Pages podcast.
Thanks a lot.
My thanks once again to Helen for joining me for today's episode. And of course, my thanks to you for listening as well. Do join me next time for another episode of the Rippling Pages podcast.